Brennan, how are you? Hey
Okay.
guys. Welcome, welcome. I see more people joining, more people hopping
Still
in.
there.
More people coming in. Hey guys, welcome, welcome, welcome. Let's see. One, two, three, more people joining in. I think we'll give them a few more minutes here. How's everyone doing today? Anybody got any sales coming up this week? Maybe next week we could talk. Just anybody raise their hands, got some sales coming in? No one? No one has any sales coming in this week, next week? Oh, we got to fix that. We're going to fix that today, guys. Don't worry. One, two, three. Oh, Bill's got something on Friday. Nice. More people joining in. I love it. How's everybody's week going so far?
Pretty good. How about you?
Doing well. I'm pumped for this meeting and this, little exercise and fun stuff that we're going to be doing today. I give everybody one more minute. Business owner today. Oh, Brendan, why don't you tell me a little bit more about that? You have a conversation with someone?
Yeah, so with what we talked about yesterday, I decided to go ahead and offer like a few 30-day free trials, essentially. And one of the people that I had been talking to, she was going to put a friend of mine, she was going to put me in touch with the business owner of her clients. So after we talked, I reached out to her and I was like, hey, instead of a homie discount, I'm just going to do a free 30-day thing for them.
Nice.
Give them the three things that I needed from them.
Yep.
And she had a call with him yesterday, said you're going to get an email from them today. So,
Look at nice.
yeah.
Nice. So all you gotta do is get the rep in, kill it, get a testimonial. It'll definitely help all the way around. Nice. All right. I think I'm gonna call it here. Actually, I see three more people joining in. I don't know. Everybody ready? Everybody jump in and get going? I think so. All right. Let's hype it up. Let's go in. Hello, everyone. My name is Connor Cadell, and I'll be running our sales training today. And a lot of people here have asked within the group, they've asked me to do some sales training here just because I have a little bit of a history in that, if you may. I started out as a setter for a high ticket position many, many years ago. Worked my way up to a closer position, and then after that, went into a sales director role, and then from there went into marketing and cascaded up that avenue to where we're at today for CMOX. So I've been in sales for just a little over 5 years now. Looking back at some of my old CRMs, I've logged almost 6,000 sales calls in terms of high ticket sales calls. So I like to think that I know what I'm doing, and I'd love to share what I've learned with all that history with you guys today. So we're going to kind of jump right in and go through a lot of the stuff that I feel is crucial for the sales process. So one of the things that I wanted to review, and we're going to break down the meeting in three different categories. So the first part of our meeting, we're going to review something that I've seen a lot of other people struggle with, particularly in some of our other meetings. It's something called imposter syndrome. And so I have a little exercise we're going to do to kind of break through some of that kind of feeling, that mentality. Something that's really helped me go through a lot of that process as well. Then from there, I'm going to review what is called the closer framework. Now, you may have heard that from Alex Ramosi, who's done way more sales than I and has really dialed in that process. But there are other elements that I add to the way that I like to do things, a little bit more practical, a little bit more for high ticket space, And also some of the other trainings that I've done, I've kind of mix match a lot of those from there. And then at the end, we'll handle objection handling, basically the process of how I like to handle those and what the process is from there. So with that kind of layout and terminology, we're gonna jump right in and go
Yeah, you
through.
should open it.
There we go. We're gonna jump right in and kick off the call here with what the popular term is called imposter syndromes. So just by a raise of hands, are there people in this group currently right now that feel like this is something that you're struggling with mentally? It's kind of affecting your sales process, maybe your outreach process. Is this a common thing, or maybe am I just delusional of, oh geez, hang on, one, two, three, keep them up, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine. Okay, so a lot of people, a lot of people here. Awesome. Well, we're going to tackle a lot of that. And hopefully, I'll be able to help you guys with that mentality block and just show you what's worked for me. And if it works for you, awesome. So, first thing I'd love to do is talk about a quote that I've heard about this specific phenomenon. And so, the quote is, "You don't become confident by shouting affirmations in the mirror, but by having a stack of undeniable proof that you are who you say you are, right? And outworking your self-doubt." And so what we're going to do today through our confidence exercise is lay out some of this information and do some workshopping together so that you guys have that undeniable proof about where you guys sit, and this will help propel you into that future of going through and breaking through that mentality, right? So the first thing that we really want to ask ourselves is really, is it might be reasonable for some people here that you might feel this way, right? It might be really reasonable. And so maybe right now at this moment, it makes sense and you shouldn't feel confident, because that's the thing, right? If we were to zoom in, what does that word confidence actually mean? So the way that I type like to look at it is through statistics, right? So people ask, especially CMOs, what is our confidence in this statistic? And so we have evidence that supports our understanding with data, right, on how confident we are whether a status is going to go one way or the other, or any kind of prediction for that matter. And so if we are confident in something, then that means that we have a high probability of achieving whatever the prediction is, right? So, like, how strong is that prediction that we have? Well, how do you make predictions? You usually have a basis of that data. And so, if our past currently, our past experiences is the data set that we have, then we can contribute that to our pile of evidence that we are who we say we are, we're servicing the way that we will, and we're able to make the claims and sales that we want to be making. And do that outreach, right? So I've done sales pretty much every day during that sales period time. That was like 2.5 years. So I've done sales every day for, let's call it, 2 years. And when people come up and say, "Oh, dude, you're really confident about sales and you just seem so certain," it's like, I'm pretty confident about sales process because I've done sales every day for 2 years. Right? Like, it just is. I think confidence in that, if you're wearing confidence, it doesn't feel like confidence. It feels obvious. And that's the big difference. Right? So if you're like, "I don't think I'm good at sales," okay. I don't know what, if somebody said to me, like, "I don't think that you're good at sales, Connor." Well, okay. I don't know what good at sales means. I've closed 4,000 of them. I don't know if that makes me good or bad. I've just done it a lot. And I'll say that this is what works for me. This is what doesn't. And if all of the information I'm going to go over today helps you, awesome. If it doesn't, no worries, because you're just not going to change the data set that I have for me on what I've accomplished and what I've done. Right? So this is it. I don't need to beat my chest and look in the mirror and like really psych myself up like, "Man, I'm really going to crush a sales call today." Right? It's just the stuff that I've been doing. And I know it because I've done it a whole lot. And so if someone here isn't confident and they may be, might be some of you here, then it might be right for you to be a little uncomfortable right now. And so we're going to get and gather our data sets together. And I would say that this exercise is really what's going to help some of the stuff that I did in the early days of CMOX. So in the link below, the evidence-based confidence building worksheet, I'll pull it up here and share my screen. I would love to review for you guys to get some sort of version of this where you can write on it. If you can't write on the actual PDF, try and get a Word document and just copy and paste some of the copy here. But this is what the worksheet looks like. Actually, here, let me share it on, let me see if I can zoom in here a little bit. Okay, can you guys see this? Thumbs up. Everybody see this? Yeah. So this is the worksheet that we're going to go through together. And the process of this is that I want you to ask yourselves right now, and just again, this is a personal experiment workshop with how you like, but for yourselves right now, what would you require someone to have done for you to say that it would be reasonable for them to sell themselves with these services, right? If you were to sit down and say, what are the requirements for somebody to make the claims that I'm a CMO, fractional CMO, and I can provide these services? If they were offering that generally, not specifically for you, but just the general market, general instruction, what would they have had to have accomplished or have done? And that's going to be the list on the left. So we want to make a list of the experience or skill sets or things that they've done that they would need to go through that. And I don't know how Casey does a lot of the clock stuff with the rooms and everything. I think he's got a whole software setup. I don't know if there's something we could do for there, but I'm just going to set a timer. We'll give it 5 minutes. For me, it's 1:13 right now, so I'll give 5 minutes now. And I can play a little jam if people want a little jam. I don't have Casey's really cool playlist, but we'll give it 5 minutes. Just write out a couple of ideas, things that you think would be required. Really think about it. And this is the exact exercise that I did as well. Actually, it's kind of starting to look like some people might be done. Actually, why don't we do this? Whenever you guys are done, why don't you just unmute yourself? That way, I'll have a visual representation of kind of who's done. All right, I see Sarah, Rachel. I'm curious, what did you guys wind up putting on your list there? If you don't mind sharing, just one or two, maybe one.
Yeah, I put, not just leading a team, but building and managing a team, including hiring, firing, skills assessment, addressing poor performance or employee behavior swiftly.
Nice.
Yeah, I also had experience managing a team effectively, like all of the pieces of that. So everything that was just mentioned, as well
Nice.
as proven revenue building. Like I would want to know that someone had experience in that led to results with direct revenue implications.
Yeah, nice. Let's see, Courtney, Kim, you guys have any other ones that you guys like to add?
I think one of the ones for me was, make other leaders' lives easier. So how are they, taking things off of the CEO or HR or sales and helping kind of streamline their sides of the business too.
Yeah. Brendan, you got one? Oh, Kim. Yep. Sorry.
Oh, I put just industry experience or number of years of experience or grown a similar company of a similar size.
A lot of experience is part of that.
Yeah.
Julie, you have questions, Don?
Yeah, I mean, I think if we're looking for a fractional CMO, that they've had CMO experience, that on all the things that come with that, or at least the head of marketing, the most senior level, it could be a VP, SVP, head of marketing, which, is all encompassing of, driving the directional strategy, as Kim said, having industry experience, knows how to talk to a board, knows how to talk to a CEO, but also has some area functional experience. So if they need to jump in and help, they can, but it's hard. It would be like, me going and being asking to be a mechanic if I've never been a mechanic.
Right.
So I would assume the similar same traits.
Yeah. We got 2 minutes left here. If you guys want to rapid fire, Don, you can go first and
Yeah. So basically, a big one for me is understanding how you can use data to influence and shape content and messaging, so that the angles that you are marketing with are really evidence-based and not just idea-based. So that's the biggest one for me that I don't find a lot of CMOs necessarily have.
Right. Okay. I think Michelle was next. I don't know, but there's not really a list or order to any of these.
Yeah, this one's fresh in my mind because I just got off a triage call like 30 minutes ago, and experience, someone else said like experience that leads to results, but more experience in that specific niche that leads to results, because she had hired another fractional CMO that is in my network and I know her, but
Right.
she isn't as niched as I am in the particular problem that they are trying to solve. So it's helping me build my case, and the case study I'm going to send her speaks directly to that problem.
Yeah. Okay, nice. I apologize for the ones other people that have your hands up. We're gonna move to the other side of the list here. So now that we have our list on the left side of things that we would think that someone in this position would need to have or should have in terms of experience and skills that they would have acquired. On the right side, I'd like for you to go through each of those items. Think back in your life at a time of when you've practiced a complementary skill, maybe that skill directly in virtually any capacity, right? You don't necessarily need to write out exactly what you did, but really just the skills that you maybe learned. So, what result did that create? What did you learn? Information like that, even if it's not directly correlated, you're going to have things that transfer. So, just like you would on a resume, if anybody's, I don't know, been a cashier, you always try to amp it up a little bit and say, well, I learned how to exchange money, customer service, community. You don't just put, I was a cashier, right? So these are the kind of skills that we want to transfer and pull from. While you guys are thinking of that list, I'm going to give you guys a few minutes to think of this one. This one might be a little bit longer. You kind of have to think about what you're doing, but you really need to convert your current relative skills and chunk them down into other skills that might match what's on the one on the list on the left. Right. So let's say we're talking about sales and you're thinking, well, I'm not really good at sales and I want to get started in it, right? Well, there's a lot of things that are required to be successful in sales that you might have evidence to be good at, right? Are you good at communicating? Can you show up on meetings on time? Are you going to be good at doing repetitive tasks? How well can you handle rejection? Right. These are all things that you could test right now before getting into sales. And so you might think, well, I'm going to be good at sales because I have this data. These are the sets that I'm pretty good at. And so if that's true, I think that this would be a good match and you would be very good at sales and you can have that evidence to say, you know what? I'm going to kick butt. I know how to go through this information and do that. Now, on the flip side, if you're saying, I hate rejection, I can't show up on time. I'm always super late. I hate talking to people every day, and rejection crushes my soul. Well, sales might not be for you, and that might be something that you'll eventually want to offset to someone. In the beginning days, it should just be you. No one else will be able to sell your services better than you. But know that that is something that you're going to probably want to switch out of if those are the cases, right? But at least you have that data set to make that information, right? So as you're coming up with the list on the right side, what are the micro things that are like, again, if you were to make the perfect salesperson or the fractional CMO person who had, you know, very little experience, but you thought they'd have a high prediction that they would be very good, what do you think you would make them do? Like, write out all those things on the right side that you have. Really just chunk it down to those basic skill sets if you can. Does anybody have any fun ones that they want to share that might match?
I had like a whole system that I created for hiring, and that I had shared with like across the marketing team, that HR really loved. And one of the questions that I used to ask was about what people were reading within the last like year. And I was explicit that it wasn't that I wanted to know like, or something that they had learned in the last year. It was either reading or what they had learned, because I wanted to make it clear that I was looking for a learning mindset. And those, the answers to that question, didn't care what they had read or what they had learned, but it indicated to me that they were looking to expand their knowledge set, that they were open to taking in new information. And so that was a really strong question. And nice. I have like a whole long process that I actually wrote up for other teams that were doing hiring, because it was quite a successful question.
Yeah. Very nice. Very cool. Anyone else have any other ones that they'd want to share that are interesting? If not, no worries. All right. Awesome. For those of you that have cameras on, hands up, thumbs up. Yes, everybody's done. Need more time. One, two, three. Got a couple. Okay. And again, you know, you can always come back to this list and this sheet and kind of compare those and build them out. A lot of the times we forget the things that we've accomplished that are impressive, because we're always looking to the forward future. And the things that you've accomplished to get to the point that you're at now are worth noting and reminding yourself that this is what I've done. This is the data stack I know. Like for me, again, it was, I took on positions that I knew nothing about, and I stayed up multiple late nights researching the heck out of everything and anything I needed to make sure that clients were successful, right? And so that's a transferable skill set that I know serves well in even things that aren't directly correlated with specific experiences that a CMO would have, right? So now what we're going to want to do is look at those two lists and see if they match, right? At what which ones match, which ones line up, and how well do those two skill sets compare to each other? Do they meet? Are they just shy of? Do they exceed that, right? So now if you said, I do kind of match that and exceed that, then at the end of the day, you guys just need to get out of your own way. Right? And just talk about what you know, and know that you have a right to sell your services and experiences in this capacity. Right? If you feel like you don't have those things and they don't quite match up, then that's fine. But you now know what those things are, and you might need to go back in the trenches, get some reps, do some research, look into these skill sets, learn what you can, and then come back. And you'll feel way more confident because you'll have, quote, outworked yourself, which is really giving yourself permission to pursue this and undeniable proof that this is where you need to be and what you're accomplishing, right? And again, the point of this exercise is that maybe you already currently have a lot of transferable skills. And so although you may have never sold before, right? Maybe 80% of the things that are required to be successful in the CMO service or even successful in sales is that you already have that 80% that you really need. And you're just missing 20% of the mechanics, right? And that's what we're going to go over today, is a lot of the mechanics. So That's what will make you good at sales. So for me, I think that sales really, really comes down to clear communication and conviction, right? Because fundamentally, if you really believe in yourself, your services, if you really believe in the thing and the service and the outcome, then you really shouldn't have an issue with rejection because you're actually trying to help the person, right? If you knew that you would do whatever it takes to make sure that your client gets great results, then you have nothing to worry about. A lot of people get that snake oil sales reputation, but that's not what this is. And honestly, what I've found in most of my sales experience is that the more honest you are and the more you wind up selling, right? Because it's so counter what salespeople do. And they're like, wow, I can really trust this person. Because if you're open and honest about what you can and can't do and what the expectations are and trying to put the individual, the customer at the center of the conversation and keeping the relationship first, long-term, that's ultimately how you're going to sell the most amount of people because they'll understand that trust, right? So that's my spiel. That's my workbook for the first one. Hopefully this conversation, this worksheet gives you guys the confidence in terms of data sets to say, you know what, I can sell my services. I can do these things because I've already done things similar or exceeding that, right? Any comments before we move on to the mechanics of sales? Was this helpful for anybody? Was there anything that they wanted to review before we moved on? Yes, no, maybe so. Okay. All right. Let me stop sharing here. While I was sharing my screen, I didn't get to see any of the conversations. So there's like 30 in here.
Connor, I'll give you the feedback based on my experience of that. So
sure.
Brendan was on the call with me yesterday and he'd suggested doing the the case study activity to help build up my kind of confidence of what I've achieved. And I think this activity today has pretty much just done that. I was just writing in the comments that I also did like a 1 out of 3, 2 out of 3, 3 out of 3 in terms of like what I'm not as good at, what I feel I'm really good at. And there was more 2 and 3 out of 3s than 1 out of 3s. So
right.
I think that's definitely helped. I think as you said, I need to get out my own way and actually recognize and acknowledge it. I think the interesting thing for me next will be when you come to the objection handling piece, because I think it's that just having those stories in my mind to be able to kind of confidently and quickly give those stories, give those examples as and when the objections come up. That'll be, so I'm looking forward to the next kind of bits that you come into.
We're going to go over.
Great activity, super helpful.
Yeah, of course. This is exactly what I did to help me because I didn't have technical CMO experience prior. But I was a sales director and a marketing director at some point in my life. And those two kind of merged and it really helped me, again, just get out of my own way, get out of my own head and say, well, I've done these things. It's just taking the 20% from the CMOX accelerator information, the framework, and positioning it in a sense where I can use my experience to escalate those services, right? So awesome. Love to hear it. All right, so we're going to go into the sales, and believe it or not, right on time, the actual sales training per se. Now, again, I'm going to break this up into two different categories. The first one is going to be the closer framework on sales, and it's really just a framework and an outline as to how sales works, how things operate, and the consistent flow of that process that has really worked for me and that I've seen work for other people as well. Again, you'll see that some of this might be Alex Ramosi, some of this might be Jimmy, I'm blanking on his name, but he's the other sales guy. And I've worked with a couple of other salespeople in the industry that have pulled something similar from there. But if you guys have any questions as we go through this next part, I'm going to put a big loud asterisk that I am going to move quickly through this because we have a lot to cover. So I'm going to move quickly. You guys listen quickly, and then we'll wrap up with any questions and everything, because we got to go through the framework and objections. We'll handle it all together. So thumbs up. Makes sense. Good. All right. Awesome. Let's see. Okay. Let me know. Everybody can see this page. Yes. Okay. Awesome. Okay. So sales training by me. Again, I've been in the high ticket space for a long time, over 70 sales calls, moved into marketing and sales. And I believe at its core, marketing is sales at scale. So this is a transferable skill set as well. As I go through these things, again, I want you guys to understand that these are principles that you don't necessarily, I don't want you guys to memorize every word and phrase that I go through, because you won't be able to remember it all unless you take the next 5 years to go into sales. Just try to remember the principles and the core elements that we review. And you can always go back to the recordings and watch this over again. But these are things that you don't need to be writing everything down and every word I put. Okay. So the first thing that we got to tackle in sales is what's called framework. So frames are the unspoken context that dictates the rules of any interaction. And we can analyze interactions as two people introducing themselves and accepting or rejecting another person's frame. And usually the person that's more confident wins out. So if you hop on your sales call and you don't lead those calls, there's a shift in framework as to who's going to be running the meeting. And if you don't take that framework immediately, the prospect will, and they'll run through and you won't be able to do any of the stuff that you want to do. Very first thing that you got to do is establish a strong framework. Now, you can do this in a couple of different ways. Noting your tone and the environment is very crucial. So at an interview, the phrase, tell me about yourself, as opposed to at a party, tell me about yourself. It's the same phrase. The words are the same. A lot of different tonality and area that you need to be aware of as you're going through those positions, especially in the beginning of a call. Now, coming into each situation with a sense of control and not just jumping at every request, staying calm, cool, and collective as you're the one in the pilot seat, the framework will always be that you're going to always be changing the framework, right? So if you're in the middle of your introduction, you're going through your beginning and somebody interrupts with a question real quick, you just say, hey, you know, Sarah, that's a great question. I'm going to circle back to that here in a minute. I really just love to get information on XYZ first before we do that. And then we'll go from there. So you're controlling the narrative. You don't need to be rude about it or anything. It's just calm, cool, collective. You're in control and moving that framework from end to end. Now, these are things that we want to make sure that we do not have happen or hope that will happen. So the way that you dictate things is on your timeline. If you want to talk about pricing, then you could talk about pricing. If you want to talk about objections, you could talk about that. But I'm going to go over the best formula on the cadence that makes the most sense. But knowing that you're the one dictating how things are going to unfold and not unfold. And you'll see that as we go through some of the scripts at the back end from here as well. So it's all about tone, like we talked about before. Certainties are often spoken with a downward inflection. So if I say, hey, come over at 7, or hey, come over at 7, right? Hey, we can schedule another meeting after this, or hey, we're going to schedule another meeting after this, right? You're setting the dictation and the tone is very important. Even though the words are the same, I want to make sure that that tonality is consistent throughout. So we also want to make sure that we have the belief that you're not there to impress. Again, like we talked about before, that unspoken framework is that they're lucky to be working with you. You're giving them something of value. So if the prospect, like I said before, disrupts this frame and starts berating you, you just need to quickly assert that you have the power to leave them. It's not worth your time, or you don't want bad clients, right? So rather than responding in the context of the way that they're saying, you respond by reframing that you aren't the only one working for their approval in the first place. And that'll help them understand that control that you have over the situation. Now, we want to shift the mindset from I'm selling this person or I work for this person to this person needs me to partner with them if they want to see growth, right? And this gives you the ability later in your relationship with the client to give them necessary pushback when needed. You'll be able to give better advice when you have that mindset, and especially if you start out the relationship with a client with in this mindset. So you're screening clients. You want to make sure that that's the way that they feel when they go through, that they're being accepted into something exclusive, and it makes them even value it that much more on those types of calls. So becoming an expert in framing people's opinions in that limiting way, you can control the menu of options that are readily available for somebody's mind. So the person that controls the menu of outcomes controls what those outcomes are. So if I said, hey, after this call, we're either going to set up another call, or we're going to have to wait until next week to do that to figure out if this makes sense. I'm controlling the menu of options, right? And you get to pick. Now, that's a lot on framework. Any questions on this as we kind of go into the next section? Okay, cool. In sales, the person who has the better second option is going to win because they can afford to, I don't want to say care less, and I know I wrote that in there, but they have the ability to leave, and that's pretty powerful, right? So having that mindset that you can also get another client if this one doesn't work out, that's really, really powerful. So we're going to go over sales beliefs. I think, again, this is part of the framework from here. I'm going to kind of glaze through a lot of these. So your goal is to give the person the power to make the decision, right? People want to believe you. They don't just randomly hop on meetings and phone calls. They want to buy, and you must help their logical brains justify the decision. So number three is selling happens before you ask, before you talk about your price point. Closing happens after, right? So the closer framework is the sells before asking price, and then the objection handling happens after. That's the closing. So it's easier to handle the selling part, the obstacles, than objections, right? So if you can tackle all of their concerns before naming your price or your ask, it's going to be way easier. You'll have a lot less objections after, right? So in the number five, expect and plan for a no. It is not failure. It is expected. If you are not getting no's on your call, or if you are not getting objections on your calls, then that means that there's no need for you to be sales. You would just be closing people left and right. There'd be no reason to have conversations if they didn't have objections. So expect that there's going to be objections, right? If for me, if you didn't get a gasp from the price tag, you didn't go high enough. That's just me on there, on a sales belief I have. Selling is the first step to becoming a coach. You're coaching somebody through that process and their logical mindset as to why they need you. Your first impressions and expectations, as we talk about in the framing section, help you dictate that relationship. Selling is helping prospects make a decision to help themselves, and they do need to be coached through that process. And that's what you do with that sales philosophy and process from there. So again, if you keep the prospect, not the sale, but the prospect as the priority, then you'll always win. It's not about you, right? Now, sales belief number four, seek to understand, not to argue. If somebody says, well, Facebook ads don't work for me, you can sit there and go, oh no, Facebook ads work for everybody. I've done this a whole bunch of times. They work. That's really going to be jarring. You can simply ask, well, that's very interesting. Why do you say that? Did something happen in the past? Is that where you're, oh yeah, well, we did an agency that ran ads. Oh, very interesting. Did they do XYZ? Did they do this? Did they do that? Oh, you know, they didn't do any of that. Oh, well, that could explain why that wasn't successful. And you come out on top for those. So seek to understand, not argue, and maintain a childlike curiosity at all times. Just like I did in that example, right? Closing and sales is a dance. It's not a fight. It's a little bit of a seduction, right? It's not beating somebody into submission. You will buy my thing, boom, 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 right? You're trying to figure out if it's a good fit for both of you. Sales beliefs, number one again. I believe selling is the transference of belief over a bridge of trust that you have to build. And therefore, you must believe in yourself and your services and your product in order to transfer that level of conviction. The only example that I think really works here is if you've ever met somebody who's extremely religious and really believes what they do, every time you're with them, you almost feel, you could feel that energy sometimes, right? Where you're like, wow, they really believe in what they're talking about. Like I can feel it. That's what you want to have about your own service and products, right? And you can only build that level of trust if you genuinely want to help them. And that allows you to ask the hard questions because you care. And you need to ask the hard questions before, because you don't want to find out things after they're already a client that would have prevented you to not sign them up beforehand, right? So the person who cares the most about the prospect wins the deal. And last but not least, please record all of your sales calls always, even the ones that you mess up. You can't go back and replay the tape if you don't record them to see where you could have gotten better, right? All right, so sales ethics, and then we'll move on to the next one. Actually, I'm just going to go to the main thought. A person must really want the goal and believe. The services will get them to their goal the way that they want them to go, and you and others will support them. If it will work for them, that's what they want to believe, not just for everyone else. So keep these three things in mind as we go through this closer framework. Basically, let me reiterate some of these because we kind of jumped a little section here. You want to be able to undertone that the services, the CMO services, will get them to their goal the way that they want them to go. So if you were selling fitness or anything like that, and they say, well, I don't really want to eat broccoli and I don't really want to move too much. Well, okay, maybe you don't need to eat broccoli, but you definitely need to change the way you eat and definitely need to move more, right? So you can still accomplish a goal and it needs to be the way that they want to, and you can categorize that for them. Number two is that you need to institute the idea that you and others on the team or whoever else you bring on or however that system works will be there to support them. And number three, that your services will work for them and it didn't just work for everybody else, right? So now we're going to go into the closer framework. Again, I'm going to kind of go through this and we'll pick apart all the stuff towards the end here before we handle the objection handling. So in the closer framework, it's actually an acronym: to clarify, label, overview their past, sell the benefits, explain objections, and then reinforce their decision. So C for clarifying. Clarify why the person is meeting with you. So that's the first thing we really have to do on a lot of these calls is in the introduction part, understand their problem so that you can focus on their motivations to persuade them to work with you, right? So you can steal some of these questions. Hey, so what got us meeting together, right? Or tell me what your marketing goals are for the next quarter. What problems are you trying to solve today? How are you currently tracking this specific KPI? Like, you really want to dive deep into, okay, we got on the call, we're here together. What brought us here on your end? Because the amount of times that people might think, well, I'm just looking around and seeing what options there are, is really just a smoke screen. I don't know about you guys, but I don't hop on random Zoom calls or meeting calls just to shop around, right? If I'm there, I'm there for a specific reason. Yeah, Ben.
Hey, Connor, just are these slides going to be available? Are you going to make them available in the lab or somewhere?
I will talk to the team about that. But I know it's recorded, so we can always go back if that makes sense.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, sorry. Okay, so hopefully that makes sense. C, got to clarify why the person is there. L, label them with a problem. Once they've identified that this is something that they want to move forward with, or that they've said this is the KPI as to why we're here together, then you want to label them with that. And that's the reason that they're there on the call. So you want to repeat to the prospect the situation back to them so that they acknowledge what they're facing. Because sometimes they'll say it, and in their head, they've said it so many times. So it's not until you say it back to them that they understand that this is a problem. And they can't solve their problem until they admit that they have one. So, you know, no, we don't have a quarterly plan, or no, we don't track this KPI. Well, then you want to label them with that and reinforce that and go, oh, so your marketing might not be on target as it could be. So it sounds like this is really an issue where you have no idea how marketing is going at all, right? It sounds like this KPI is really important to track, but there's just nobody there to lead the team and to make sure that we're hitting goals or track it at all. Does this sound correct? Does this sound like what you're facing, right? These are very powerful questions. And again, if you keep them at the forefront, you'll be able to ask these questions, right? Now, we're going to want to overview the past experiences that they've done to try and solve this problem. And you might come across people that said, oh, I haven't tried to solve this problem. Oh, well then when are you trying to solve that? So there's two different variations here. Let me go through the slide first. So I want to get the prospect to explain what they've done in the past to solve this problem. Understand why it was painful or why it didn't work out. And it's always painful it didn't work out because they wouldn't be talking to you if it did work and talk about that problem, right? So have you hired someone for this position in the past to try and fix it? What other things have you done to try and get this specific result? How did those past efforts work out? And if they say, well, this has just become a recent thing and we're looking for different options, and say, oh, well, how did you solve it in the past? Because if this was a recent problem, who's in charge of making sure that this didn't become a problem? Or who's in charge of this going through here, right? There's always different childlike curiosity questions that you can really dig deep into figuring out where they're at, where they need to go, and why they can't seem to get past that, and make sure that it makes sense for you to say, you know what? I can solve this. They're a good client. They're a good fit, right? Then we're going to go to S, which is sell the benefit. Now, selling the benefit through a story that they can relate to is a little tricky. It definitely can be at some times. But the main idea is that you want to sell the vacation, not the flight. Nobody thinks of their vacation and thinks of TSA, right? Oh, I got to take my shoes off, take my belt off, go through a scanner, have somebody go through a metal detector. No, they sell Hawaii. They sell the beer on the beach in a hammock. That's what they sell. And that's the story of when you get to the point of you selling your services as to how you can help them resolve their pain. This is the way that you would want to do it. So you could steal some of the stuff I put here on the bottom, but oh, you know what, Becky, we've seen that there are three things that make our clients successful in the thing that you're talking about right now. And that would be accurate data tracking, accountability, and effective teams, right? This is how we do it. This is how we solve the problem. And this is how we do it for our clients to make sure that we can solve that problem for good. We take a marketing department off your plate so that you don't have to worry about this anymore. I'll handle this department and we'll meet once a week and I'll give you those updates, tell you what we've done, what we're struggling with, how we're going to solve it. And then we move on to the next week and I just handle all that for you, right? The pro tip here is that you want to sell your benefits again in a story-like way, keep it down to three you want to keep it in a short format where you can just breeze through your part. You don't need to go on a 20-minute tangent about what you do, where you started, how it comes through a whole thing. You just say, these are the services. This is how I help. This is how we get the results for other people. And you want to think of the problem at the center of the table, and you're moving to their side of the table to fix this problem together, right? It's not you and them on the opposite end of the table looking at their problem. It's you're coming to their side and saying, we can tackle this together, right? And this is how we do it for other people like you, and this is how we can do it for you, right? Does that part make sense? Because this is really the only time that you would quote-unquote sell, and it really should only take 5-10 minutes of you explaining what you do, your services, and how it works. So I could take a minute here, take a beat, if anybody has any questions on that specifically. No, going once, going twice. Okay.
Connor, sorry, mate. Oh, quick question on that. Yeah, I think it's connected. And maybe one to hold to the end for more detail if we've got time. But
sure.
I asked a question yesterday, which I wanted to bring up today around Casey trains the MSS 2.0 script.
Yep.
I've used that quite effectively on a couple of sales calls. but didn't ultimately manage to close them for various different reasons, didn't close. Sure. So on the last one that I did, I went with a recommendation from a couple of my other CMOX peers who said to kind of tackle it more through a sales deck, like a presentation, like 12 slides. So I guess kind of what I'm asking is, when it comes to the sell bit, what's been your experience that works? Do you tend to go more down the route of just asking questions, a lot of discovery, like the MSS 2.0, like Casey does?
Yep.
Or do you have a pitch deck as well? Or do you I think it might be a good one to probably get a thread going in the lab with everybody else to see how people are, what's working for everybody else. But I can see how both work. And I almost feel like maybe there's a bit of a hybrid required of both. But just when you mentioned that point about it should only take 5 to 10 minutes of selling, I felt like the MSS 2.0 script was 90 to 95% questions and really kind of going into more detail with the prospect. Yeah. Whereas the pitch deck was 90% selling, so complete opposites. So that's just my kind of something I'd like to really get my head around and maybe figure out the best way for me.
Yeah. You know what the best answer is just like anything else in marketing, you split test.
Yeah.
Right. You get the reps in, you figure out what the data set is. So you get a couple of ideas. You think, hey, this might be the best one. This might be the best one. Which one's going to work for you and your industry and you specifically? The way you sell and communicate is a lot different from me. And I can go through and articulate my sales and my services in 5-10 minutes and do it in a more conversational way than, again, some other people here might be able to do. The goal is you're always going to change your sales process that works best for you until you find one that converts the best. And at the end of the day, just like anything else, it's split testing. The amount of iterations I've done on sales scripts, as you can imagine, is I think I had at least over 200 different scripts that I've used and changed and adapted and moved, and it's ridiculous. But that's probably the best answer there. There's no one size fits all. It's
that feels like what I've done a little bit, but because I'm not getting that many sales calls, it's hard to get the volume to be able to really split test it. But I've got another sales call next week, so I'll do a bit of thinking on which approach I'm going to take for that one. Cool. Yeah. All right. Yeah, that's helpful. Cheers, Connor.
Yeah, of course. Hopefully that I answered the question for a bunch of you. We have, I have about 7 minutes left on this specific chapter here. So what I'll do is, does anybody else have any question on this? I have, maybe we got time for one more. If anybody had anything they want to cover, yes, no. Okay, cool. Awesome. So the way that we're going to go through this sale, the benefit, I like to do with a bunch of stories very, very quickly. But one of the parts that I've heard work a lot and helps as well is when you can relate to something that everybody has done. So the one that I like to use all the time is actually brushing your teeth, believe it or not. So I know that down at the end of the day, you know, your parents or whoever, when you were younger, they had to tell you to do something, like brush your teeth every day and every night, right? So when you were little, you needed someone to remind you and drive that goal to a point where you do it all by yourself now. Look at you go, right? So the goal isn't just to get you to do a bunch of marketing stuff, but to work with you to figure out an internal marketing system that you would like, that's going to be driving better outcomes, that grows the business. And as a result of that, along with implementing systems and a team within the business, this is something that the business can stick with and become self-sufficient in, just like brushing their teeth all by themselves, right? So that means that over the long haul, you'll get to where you want to go. And if it makes sense and we can accomplish that, then we're going to solve this problem for good. Does that make sense? And that's exactly how I would intertwine a story into something relatable that explains how there is external tools for internal push of a business, right? An external force, you being the fractional CMO, to build internal push in the business with systems, processes and tools, right? So again, one example, and that would, that little story would tackle one little thing if I was trying to explain accountability, let's say. Let's say like one of your benefits is as a fractional CMO, accountability for the team. That little verbiage would fit that one. And I would only do like two or three. So I would have another one about something else. Let's say, data tracking, right? Like it would be a different story with a different ideology from there, if that makes sense. So you just need a couple about what your services are and really be able to sell it in that manner. Make sense? Thumbs up. Good, good. Some awesome. Sweet. So 4 minutes early, we are on fire. We're going to handle objection handling. I feel like this is going to be a little bit of a longer one for some of us here. Again, what we want to do is slay the zombies. And that is a coined term, not by myself, but basically means that the more that we can handle before we get to this point in terms of any obstacles that they have or thought processes that they have, you can handle it all right now before you get to the pricing point. So if you're finding that, let's say every time people come in and say that the prices are too high for your services, in this side of the benefit here, this, before you talk about your pricing, would be where you would address that. So you might need to be adding something here that says, you know, we are CMOs that fractionally work, which means we get a fractional of what those salaries are. Now, the average salary in America for a CMO is, I don't know what it is now, but let's say it's 250K, right? So we're not at that price, so you don't need to worry about that. And that's the benefit of having a fractional CMO. So again, I didn't necessarily say that we're incredibly expensive. I actually did the opposite, but I price anchored it. So they have an idea of, oh man, 250K a year, right? That's the mentality. So when I hit them with a price later about what it is, it's a lot more reasonable to them. But I'm handling it now, as opposed to after I have the price and then they get, whoa, that's coming out of nowhere. That's way too much, right? That's harder to turn around. So if you're seeing that there's consistent things on the back end of your pricing, you can start to weave those in into the sales part of this. This is where you would plug it in, right? Again, with stories or any kind of examples or testimonials or anything like that, right? So everything that we've handled up to this point is slaying the zombies. Everything up to this point are obstacles that we're over, that we've overcome, that we've talked about, and being able to throw this out here and tackle very, very easily and quickly. The next portion is when we drop the price and we talk about what it is, whatever you guys are charging for whatever they're going through. And this is when it turns into closing. This is when it turns into objections. Again, these are things that we want to expect and move through. So again, don't try and write down all of the examples or all the objections. Just remember the principles and the formula that makes sense that you want to go through, right? So now that we've gotten to the E part of the closer framework, we want to explain away their concerns. Now, there's a lot of sales theory in terms of how many objections there really are. The best that I've seen is that they've boiled it down to about five grouped objections. Everything falls under these five that categorize. So most of the time, it's either a timing issue. There's a value issue. There's a fit issue, an authority issue, or an avoidance issue. Most objections fall under these five. I've put some examples here as well. But what's very cool about the psychology, cool for me anyway, if anybody else finds it awesome, and by all means. But what I find very cool about the sales psychology is that you can actually break down what these objections convert into to find out how close you are to an actual close. So the top three in terms of a time objection, a value objection, or a fit objection is based off of something else, different circumstances. And those are the farthest ones from somebody actually making a decision. The one about authority is that they're going to push the responsibility of making a decision onto somebody else, right? So the first group, they're pushing that decision onto an external circumstance. The number four one is when they push it to someone else. And the fifth one, which is the closest one to themselves, is that they're not coming to a decision, right? So this is the onion of blame. And this is classic Hormozy fashion, where he comes up with these nice little diagrams, but I think it fits exactly what we're talking about here. The closer that somebody is to the middle is how close they are to actually making a decision. So if they are making a circumstantial objection, then that means that they're on the farthest one. And you can internally say, okay, this objection is based off of some other circumstance. So there's probably going to be three or four more, maybe five more objections that I should be facing before I can get to the actual decision being made, right? If we get to they're blaming it on other people, then it's like, hey, maybe there's only one or two objections left and I can just tackle through. Again, you're expecting objections, right? This is just how you can gauge them. And if they come right into the middle, then you're like, oh, awesome. One objection, maybe two, and we're gold, right? Make sense? I'll just show this one more time just to break it down. So now we're going to tackle the objection handling. Again, the way that there are, I believe that that there are five. I've seen a lot of theories about seven, and some people say it's really three, but I like five. That tackles a lot of them. So in the time objection, there's even three subsets within that. And again, please don't, you know, you don't have to memorize all of these and go through all of them. It's just understanding the principles and the mentality of it, right? So in terms of the time objection, whether it's now's not a good time or I'm too busy, there's different levels of that. It might be a macro one where it's like this season, quarter two is just really busy for us and we can't bring on new team members. It might be a micro one. I don't really have the day-to-day to bring you on and teach you all the stuff and go through all the different things, right? Or it might be a win-then fallacy, which if anybody knows anything about gyms, they get that all the time. Basically, they'll say, well, when I get fit is when I'll go to the gym. Or when I make X amount of money, then I can afford you. It's like, well, I help you make more money. So, you know, you're kind of thinking this backwards, right? I'll eat healthy food when I'm fit. It doesn't work like that, right? So we're going to break these down from here a little bit as well. In the macro seasonal one, now isn't a good time. Again, we want to break these down into three different categories. So the first one is making sure that they feel understood and heard. Second one is explaining a story or a situation that kind of combats that. And then the third layer of that is pushing it home to break that mentality. Because most of the time, it usually is a mentality issue, right? So the way that you would tackle this in terms of the time for seasonal one, you would say something along the lines of, hey, I totally understand. Let me ask you a question, right? Do you think that this is something that you want to last forever, like your business? You want this to last long term? Yes? Okay, cool. Do you think you're going to be busy again in the future? Yes? Okay. Well, because that happens in business, right? So it wouldn't be better. Wouldn't it be better to start now when you're busy? Because if you learn how to implement the systems and changes that I want to incorporate now when you're busy, you'll be able to do it forever, especially when we're slow. Just imagine that, right? Because if you can only learn during a perfect circumstance, then you're going to fall short whenever things get busy again, and you won't be able to grow the business whenever you get busy, right? And additionally, isn't that busy time the best time you like to have the most support, especially from another C-suite individual, right? Again, you're taking the mentality of now's not a good time and flipping it on its head to now that's actually the reason why it is the best time, right? Again, formulas. So we can break that down even smaller, where it's basically totally understand busy is the best time. You're going to get busy again, so you want to fix this no matter when. And now is the best time to get support when you need it most, right? Now let's do that same formula and that same format for the day-to-day one, or the hours within the day, right? It's like, you could say this again. I like to use a lot of stories because stories really stick with people. So you would say, hey, you know, you don't have time in your day. I totally understand. I used to say the same thing. And then one day, my wife grabbed my phone and saw how many, you know, you tracks how many hours you're on TikTok and says, hey, look at all this time you spent on TikTok today. It's like, oh, I found your time, right? It's all right here. So do you think that there's someone else on earth that has less time than you that is still making it happen? Probably, right? And if they can, you can too. So everyone has the same 24 hours. It's not like Jeff Bezos is there answering every machine, right? He's leveraging other people. And so it's how about you allocate that time, that day to day. And at the end of the day, me coming on as a fractional CMO, the first thing I'm going to do is cut out 90% of the stuff that's not working. Because if it was working, we wouldn't be here. Right. So my job is to take this off your plate and cut off 90% of stuff that's not working anyway. You're going to free up all your time. See how that flips? Does anybody have any questions on this? It's kind of a framework to handle most objections in this format. And I understand I have more experience in doing this for different scenarios, but does anybody have any questions before I move on to all the other ones? Because I'll tackle the other ones relatively quickly. Yes, no, maybe so. Going once, going twice. Okay, cool. Now we'll go to the when-then fallacy. Same thing. When I have more time, I'll do the thing. Okay. Hey, listen, I totally understand. And at the end of the day, this really kept me stuck for years. So I typically like to call it out and just say that line of reasoning is called the when-then fallacy. And it's called a fallacy because you have the understanding of things backwards. Right? Like when I have more time, then, or when I have more money, then I'll start saving. Right? It's like the point of us coming in is to fix this. The mentality is a distortion. It's not real. So you realize that this mentality could be holding you back. And I know this better than anybody because I'm a skeptical guy. And the reason I know this logical thing is because I'm the first person that had to overcome it. Right? And that might be you too. So we want to make sure that we're not just delaying things that don't make sense, that's going to hold you back. Like how many quarters is it going to be that you can't fix this thing or fix this problem? Again, remember, we labeled them earlier in the call with a problem, right? We're just bringing it back up here. How long is that going to go for until you actually fix it? Hopefully that makes sense. Now we're going to go to the value one, right? I saw in some of the lab, I think this was one of the ones that people were talking about specifically. We'll again talk about that at the end. But why costing a lot is a good thing, right? So again, if somebody says that's too much, I generally believe that we weren't able to express the value prior, right? We didn't do enough in the obstacle section of explaining the value as to why certain things cost a certain amount. But again, even if you're here, you got to do something. So this is, again, the better script. So, you know, hey, I totally understand that this might cost a lot to have us come in, but this is exactly why you guys are going to be successful, because this means a lot for you. And at some point, you're going to have to draw a line in the sand and say, we can't be fumbling around and not knowing what our numbers are and throwing money at marketing or sales or whatever and just hoping that things work, right? So my question to you is, if me coming on board was $1,000 a month, right? Would you actually believe that this investment will get you the result that you're looking for? Because I can find you people that'll do it for $1,000, but you're going to get that kind of quality that you're paying for, right? And so this is exactly why we come in and do what we do and know what we're doing, because we don't want to have happen. How long is it that I can't afford it to be on your list of problems? Like, let's solve that now. Because if we put a line in the sand, you're going to have a higher chance of likelihood of being successful, because there's more on the line for you and there's more on the line for us. And we're going to be able to tackle this problem together. Right? See, again, taking it and flipping it. You can also go a different route in turning, you know, again, depending on your clientele, if that cost is really more of a relative thing. So again, you could say, hey, I totally understand that, you know, this sounds like a lot. If all this did was put an extra $50K a month in the business, would it be worth it? Right? An ROI. If all this did was make sure that you knew exactly what every month numbers are going to look like so that you can make informed decisions, then would it be worth it? Right? If so, then that's just a belief thing holding you back. So at what point would it be more unreasonable to believe than not to believe that this is something that you're going to need, right? And again, you could say, you know, is this something in terms of getting a four-year degree? Like, is it more expensive than that? I don't think so. Do you have a car, right? Like, did you have the money inherently to just go out and buy a car outright? Or was it just that it's not really a lot because you still had the money to do that and found a way to make it work because you knew that this is something that you needed to do? And so if all this did was put this amount in for you, wouldn't that be worth it? Right? There's what's money good for anyway? So, hey, I totally, Amanda, I totally understand. But here's the thing. That money is going to get spent either way. Right? 12 months from now, you're going to spend that money. And that could be even in the form of testing things that you don't know what you're testing on. That could be in the form of doing other things or buying lessons from other programs to learn the information that needs to be learned. Or you could just use my experience and my time and do that now. Right? So what is money good for anyway, if not to utilize and leverage other people's time and experience, which is why we're here. So best case scenario, we fix this outcome. We do this thing. We rock and roll. We get the ROI. Worst case scenario, you're at least going to know exactly. Again, you're going to have to specify your services, but you could say you're going to exactly know what your KPIs are, what things to look for. Get into the world of where someone like me would look for different scenarios and different goals and objections, right? In terms of your marketing. And again, both options have risk, right? But the only one that is risk-free is that you're not going to change any of the results or any of the goals if you don't do anything. If you do nothing, that's the only guarantee that you have that something is it's going to stay the same. So the money's going to get spent either way if you want this problem to be fixed. It's just how you want to maximize your ROI. I could see you in a year and a half and see what you've bought and done to see if it'll fix it. Or I could do it now, right? Hopefully you guys are understanding the theme. This is making sense. Okay. Again, resourcefulness. There's a lot in the value one. I think this is one of the more common ones about the money objection handling. So there's a couple of different variations here that you can use. But hey, no, that's too much. Hey, you know, Thomas, I totally understand. But you know what made self-millionaires have in common? They both started at zero, right? And so if this is too much, it's usually a sign of how we want to utilize our resources. It's not normally a thing of having cash on hand, but there might be other creative ways that we need to utilize. And so if you've heard of the Nike story, they didn't have money. They were going to go bankrupt. So what did Nike do back in the day? Well, they actually went to their vendors. They went to their vendors and said, hey, I need you to pay me and pay my rent and pay my employees this month, because if not, you're going to lose us as a customer. Just imagine that. As a business owner, you went to your vendors and said, I need you to pay my bills because I'm not going to be in business any longer if you don't. And that's what they did. And then after that, they were able to go through. And a story like that shows how someone in your position needs to be resourceful in all different avenues. Right? If you've ever had an unexpected bill come up or life-saving surgery, you're going to find the money for it. You're going to be resourceful. So if you need help opening a business line of credit, if you need to open a credit card to pay for my services, if we need to do XYZ to do that, then let's get resourceful together and figure it out, because this problem's not going to go away until we do that. Right? Make sense? Everyone's following? Awesome. Awesome. Does anybody want me to go faster or slower for some of these? I think there's only a couple slides left on them. Got about 15 minutes, and I want to make sure that if you guys have any specific questions, we have time to tackle those.
Can you go back to slide 35, please?
35. Yeah, this one.
Yeah. I was just wondering if you could hit that second arrow again in the part about when it would be reasonable, unreasonable to believe. Mm-hmm. And can you give me some examples of like what's the response been from prospects that you've talked to and kind of how you've handled those and what were the objections that they actually had once you dove into it?
Yeah. I don't mean to make this sound one way or the other. I don't really get, I mean, I haven't had too many objections in terms of the fractional CMO part. More of it was just like more of on the bottom of it. Like these upper ones weren't quite things that I had gotten for this specifically yet.
Okay.
But if you were to go through this, the idea, I'm just going to not say something specific. I'm trying to generalize it for the mentality part. But the idea here is that the money isn't actually a lot. In terms of business, in terms of what you would normally pay a fractional or a CMO, I should say, or in terms of any kind of business that you're running, it's really not a lot to have a C-suite employee come in and be able to do the things that you're going to be able to go through and accomplish. And you're trying to have them understand that by saying, if all this did was this, you would normally probably pay something similar or comparable to this to get done anyway, right? If I wanted an agency to come in and do a quarterly plan based off of my business, by default, by minimum, and this is just me knowing marketing agencies, they're charging 6-7K anyway for that, right? So to have somebody in your business and working in that, what you're really trying to do is just say, what are you comparing this dollar amount to that's making you think it's too much? Is it a 4-year degree in college? Because it's a lot less than that. You can go get a 4-year degree in marketing and come back and let me know how it goes, right? It's that kind of mentality. And again, my tone might sound a little berating. I promise it's a lot more soft when I'm actually going through in the sales mentality because you're having conversations, but I'm just trying to get the point across for everybody else here. But does that make sense? Like, is this more than a car? Like, to pay for a month, like are you that where it's like, hey, I can't do that, but that's that kind of mentality, if that makes sense. Like, what's the price point where you would believe that it would be more unreasonable that this wouldn't work than believe that it would?
Yeah, that was the part that I was kind of confused about. So what does that question mean?
You're basically saying that you're basically telling them that it's a mental belief, right? So at what point would it be more unreasonable to believe that this wouldn't work for you than to not believe? Basically, you're basically phrasing it as saying, at what point is it like, this is unbelievable, this will not work for me? What is that price point where it's like, oh, this will believe for me? It's the same thing as before where, if I charge $2,000, are you going to actually believe that this works for you? Are you going to actually believe that a trained, high-functioning C-suite CMO is going to come in, dedicate these 10 hours a week, go through and write out quarterly plans, work with vendors, set up back-end systems, like lead a team? Does that sound reasonable at 2K? Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Where's that point of like disbelief that you're comparing, saying that this is too much, right?
Gotcha. Okay. That makes sense. Thank you.
Yeah. I think it's just a phrasing thing. But you're going to have to, for your own, again, knowledge base, kind of figure out a flow that makes sense for you. But it's one of the better ways, I would say, to tackle some of that too, because a lot of the hiring, unless it's the CMO directly, they don't get paid that, like they get paid a certain amount. They don't get that left over. They don't make those kinds of investments for a business. And so for them to say 11K a month, that's a lot. Well, it's like, what are you comparing it to? Right. Because I know vendors that charge way more than that for simple things. So a CMO might have a different insight because they're always investing in different stuff. So you just have to kind of play the audience that you're talking to, if that makes sense.
I like that. Compared to what?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, what are you comparing it to? Because, you know, that kind of thing. So hopefully that makes sense for there.
It does. Thank you.
Question. Yep. Perfect. Yeah. I think it's just a phrasing might have thrown some people off. So I appreciate it. Yeah. I think we're on fit. Any other questions? I'm going to jump through the last few. Okay. So again, fit. So I don't know if anybody really gets this one where it might just not be a good fit for them. Again, it's the same kind of mentality where you just say, okay, so, you know, it might not be for you. I think you guys would be a good fit because this is the industry that I work in. But at the end of the day, we vote with our dollars about the things that we care about. And honestly, if you showed me what your business was spending your time and money on, I could probably tell you where your future's going, right, in terms of marketing and sales. So I had someone that was just like that I worked with before, and they said, you know what, I don't want to do this thing either. And I told them the story, hope it's okay. But as they're going through and maturing with their business, you start to learn, it's very similar, that things in the world require a certain personality to have you change into. And so just as you want to become new identities for your business, you start to have new priorities as well. And so you may not have prioritized pay-per-click ads, and you may not have done that. But if you are looking to grow the business and you are looking to grow beyond where you're at now, but on that threshold, you're going to have to do things that you haven't done before for the business. One of those things would be bringing on a CMO, bringing on somebody who can intertwine the vendors, the sales, the marketing, right? You kind of get where I'm going with a lot of that. I could go through a whole script, but basically you're basically saying, because rich people spend money on themselves to learn skill sets and to educate what they don't know, they spend money on those skill sets and they spend money on other people's skill sets to leverage them, right? Because I want to align my identity with the identity of those that came before me that have done the things that I want to do. And just like, you know, two girls going into a makeup thing and realizing, hey, you know, I have to start learning how to wear makeup, right? We too need to step into that identity so we can grow into that next chapter of what your business might look like. Does that make sense? That's kind of a Sephora story, basically. They had a whole marketing campaign about little girls changing identities by learning how to use makeup, how to buy makeup, how to utilize it, go through that. So again, it's just the principles where you're kind of stating, hey, this might not be a good fit for us. And you're saying it might not be a good fit for you right now, but the future of the business where you want to go, this would be a good fit for them because they need to be doing X, Y, Z. And they're aligning with businesses that are making more. And this is the way that they do that. Right? Yes. Cool. Same thing for it's not a good fit. Hey, maybe you're not a good fit for us. Hey, I totally understand. We got to change to see change. And right now, the pain of change might not be greater than the pain of staying the same. And so is the company in enough pain right now? Are you guys at rock bottom? Because it might sound like you're not. And if you're not right now, then this isn't a big enough pain point for you to do something that needs to be addressed and changed, right? If it were, then we could talk about how that makes sense. But it might be that you're not there. And maybe there's some other fire that's in the company that this is, again, where if you labeled them in the beginning of the call, you could, again, bring this back up, right? And say, this is what you labeled the pain as. Is it bad enough that you need me to come in and fix this and then do X, Y, Z and find these things out? It might not be. There might be something else. And you might have to go back to the part of your sales process where you tried to do a little bit more discovery and find out, well, what was the pain then? Because I thought it was this, and this is what we were talking about the whole time. But if this really isn't a priority, if you're thinking, we'll fix this in 2-3 years, then let that be a 2-3 year thing. I think that it might be important if you don't have that. But what do you think is the priority of the business to get fixed right now? Right? And if they say, well, you know, this is a priority. This is something where the pain is really great and we have to fix this right now. Awesome. I'm here and I'm available next week on Tuesday. Let's set up a time. Like let's move on. Right? Any questions on that one? No. Okay. Hypothetical. Again, this is really more of a fit one. I'm not sure this is a good fit for us. Like, okay, well, if this program, if this system, if this setup had everything you need to invest in it, if this magical, actually, scratch that. Let me rephrase the hypothetical one. So basically, you're comparing this to an ideal outcome, an ideal program that might not actually exist. So let's say you talk about CMOX Engaged, and they say, well, you know, I don't know if that's really, not sure if it's for us, right? That might not be what we're looking for. It's like, okay, yeah, I totally understand. That might not be the program that you're looking at. What program ideally would you be looking at? If you could wave a magic wand and get the exact CMO program that you needed, what would that be? What's everything that you would need that you would immediately say, yes, this is what I need and I would invest in? And if, like, what's missing? What's different from what's ideal to what we have and what we're offering, right? Now, here's where you get the discretionary. If they say, well, you know, I'd really love it to be 11 hours a week instead of 10, you know, you can decide if you want to fight them on that and go, oh, okay, well, then we'll just change it to 11. Good to go? Can we sign up now? Yes? Okay, cool. And sometimes you'll find those little small ones, or maybe it's something where I really wish you had, you know, a dedicated agency to do all the implementation stuff. It's like, hey, well, you know what? That's one of the things that we tackle right away, where we'll get somebody in place to start doing these things, and that's part of the program. Oh, okay, well, that's great. Or maybe there's something that they're just like, you know, I really don't want you to email me ever. Like, just don't email me, always Slack. I don't like that about your program. Okay, great. Then that I'll remove that. No emails for you. Like, what are the things that are missing? And if they come back and say, oh, there's nothing that you know they need, which I've never had, but hypothetically, if they're like, well, if I had a magic wand, there wouldn't be anything. Okay, well then this then what are we doing here? Right? You didn't clarify the problem or why we were meeting in the beginning of the call. You see how this ties back to the beginning of the sales conversation, where you're trying to tackle the obstacles before getting to the objections, right? So yeah. So if they say, no, I mean, I wouldn't add anything. It sounds like you guys have everything. It might be a tweak here or there. Okay. Well, then it sounds like it really has nothing to do with the program. And it sounds like it really has to go down with something else. Or usually that means trust, but you would just say, yeah, sounds like it's got really nothing to do with the program. Just sounds like it's got stuff to do with you or us or what we got going on. So let's talk about it. What more do you need from that relying trust phrase, right? And that's typically what they'll say. Well, I want to make sure it works for, that's where they would, again, you could start to see the onion layer peel back and go, well, the actual objection was we want to make sure that it works for us. This is going to work for us. And then you go back to that objection handling that we talked about before, right? Which would be this one. So right in the same field there, right? Hopefully that's making sense. I think there's only a couple more. Yeah, perfect. Lack of authority. Hey, I need to talk to somebody else, business partner. Hey, I totally understand. You need to go talk to this investor, your business partner, whatever. I normally would have clarified that they had to have been on that call prior, but hypothetically, let's say they weren't. You really want to make sure that you can get a verbal agreement. They might not even need to sign anything if that's the case, depending on how their structure is. But if you can get a verbal agreement at this point, that would be great. I would still try to get them to sign up. And the way that I would do that is basically saying the same thing of, yeah, so let me ask you a question. I totally understand you got to go talk to, you know, John or whoever. Are they currently approving that this is a problem? Like, do they agree that this should be fixed? No, yeah, they agree that this should be fixed. Okay, cool. So is there any other part in the business where, like, they would happen to say no to any of the things that we've reviewed? I don't know if they'll say no to anything here. And they might say, no, they would say no to this. Well, they're not there to justify it. Like, the only person you're talking to is there to clarify. So it's actually their objection. And that's, again, where you would handle that right there. But if they said no, no, they wouldn't have really any issue with any of this. Okay. Do you think they would be opposed to any of this? Right? Do they understand all the things? No, they got it. Okay. So if roles were reversed, would they do this? Would they sign up without talking to you or go through? They might. Okay, cool. Then you can too. Let's sign up. Right. Or they might go, no, they would want to talk to me first. Like, okay. Well, I want to make sure that this is a position of asking. You're not asking for thing of permission, but you're asking for support, because usually you're talking to a CEO or somebody higher. You could say, I want you to be in a position of making a decision. And this decision is where you're not going to be really asking for permission to do these things to fix this part of the business. You're really going to be asking for support to do that, right? Hey, I brought on a fractional CMO. I need your support to do this. I've already made that decision, because at the end of the day, this is your decision and your company. So if you ask and they said no, and then this continues on with this problem for the next 2 quarters, are you going to resent that person for having said no and not being on our call today? I just don't want that to happen, right? And you put them in the mindset of, yeah, I do need to make a decision. Again, my job here isn't really for them to hardcore just need them to say yes. I just need them to make a decision at this point, right? I want to give them the power to say yes or no. And this is where, if you had a guarantee, I would implement it here and say, listen, why don't we do this? Sign up now. I'll start getting everything rock and rolling. And if for whatever reason, you know, Amanda comes back and is like, hey, no, that was really dumb. We're not going to do that. You know, get rid of it. Just let me know. Like, we'll fix it. We'll go through and tackle it there. But if you think that they agree with the struggle and they wouldn't really have any objection to this, then let's do this now. And if at worst case scenario, I have this guarantee of XYZ and we'll figure it out then. Right. So you get that duality of being able to handle both. Does that make sense? Yes. Michelle.
So mine's more of a general question, kind of leans into this one. So I tend not to like push too hard for like all of these objections. Can you share any successes you've had where you felt that way, but you're like, I'm going to push anyways, and how that has turned into them changing their mind and saying like, yeah, you know, let's go ahead and try this out?
Yeah, all the time. Basically, again, you're expecting objections, right? And so a lot of the times, I want everybody to sit down, take 2 seconds mentally and say, have I ever been pitched anything at all in this manner? Most of you probably have. And the minute that somebody said, what's your decision, yes or no, there's a hesitation in your heart of, I don't want to make this decision right now, right? That hesitation comes from the psychological ability that we want the thing, but we don't like being sold, right? For whatever reason, we like buying things and we like people selling us stuff, but we don't like actually being sold on anything because we feel like we've been manipulated. And that's usually because back in the day, sales used to be a lot more slimy like that, right? So your job here is to ask the hard questions. Have them come to a point on the call where they are actually making a decision and they feel empowered to do so. And again, that's where if you keep them at the center, you're going to win all the time, because even if they say no, you know that they made the right decision for them. You want them to be comfortable. And that's where you're distinguishing yourself from other salespeople of, I'm not some slimy guy who just wants the yes. I want what's best for you. And you make it a safe space for them to make a decision that's genuinely going to help them.
Thanks for reframing that.
Yeah. Awesome. We got two more here. We'll do that real quick. Avoidance. This is the last part of the objection. This is where they will have to make a decision. They can't push it on anybody else or any other circumstance. And so you are presenting them with that right now. So avoidance, there are three different variations of this one. There's past, present, and future. They're all more or less the same. But let's say, hypothetically, they say, hey, I need to think about it. Sure, we get this one all the time. It's like, hey, I totally understand. I want you to know that you might need to think about it, but this isn't a fast decision, right? You've been facing this problem from our conversation earlier for a couple quarters now. and you've come this far where you've done research, you found me, we've talked about all of this, and maybe there's something here in your past, again, excuse me, where we talked about their past, what they've done in the past to try and tackle this. Maybe there's something there that's struggling for us to move forward. And what I don't want to have happen is you wait a whole other year of almost having this fixed, right? And so you get to ask, how much has not deciding on something to get anything in order to get this fixed, how much is that costing you in that inaction? How much is it costing the company every quarter to not know what the numbers are, the ROIs, right? Like, you went before, maybe you brought on an agency and they weren't able to do anything, but the problem still remains. You may have gotten into a car accident, but I promise you're still driving. Right. Yeah, you had a bad experience, but at the end of the day, you need to get places and need to solve that problem. And this, and you need to go through with making a decision as to if this is the best one for you at the time. Right. And you can get real deep with this one if it's like a past thing. It just really depends, because again, a lot of people in the sales nowadays think that it needs to be a lot, very, very formal, very whatever. But you have to remember, at the end of the day, you're talking to a business owner or somebody who really cares about their business, and they're just people, right? They're just people trying to figure out the problem, and you're there to help them. And so, if you really genuinely care about them and their outcome, and helping them with their service, it's going to be the greatest starting point for your relationship long term, right? So now we're going to go to, I need to think about it present. Hey, I totally understand. But you know what I do know is that you're not going to hop off this call. You're not going to go out, look at a window, really, you know, brush your face, go, I really need to think about this. Let me ponder it. I know you're going to go pick up your kids. You got to do laundry. You got to cook dinner, clean dishes. Tomorrow, start again. Right. And so at the end of the day, we really don't need time to make a decision. Our brains are pretty good. We can make decisions pretty quickly and inform decisions. But at the end of the day, you might need some more information. So let's walk through that process of making a decision. Right. Do you think that what I've offered today is going to meet the needs of the business? Yes or no? And they'll say yes or no. And if they say yes, awesome. If they say no, then you got to go back up to the hypothetical one. Okay, well, if there was a perfect, right? You see how we just went out of that onion again, right? So if they say, can this, what I've offered today, meet the needs of the business? Yes, it can. Okay, cool. Am I the team or the business that you want to do business with to get this fixed? Yes or no? Yeah, we trust you. We think that you are the team to do that. Awesome. Do you believe that this will work for you? Yes or no? Yeah, I think it will work for us. Okay, cool. If that's a yes to all three, then all you have to, you know, do is just not sabotage yourself, right? So do you have a credit card? Do you want me to help you enroll in an Amex? Like, can I get you good to say yes or no either way? Right? And that's kind of where you're pushing them to make that decision, because you're trying to give them an informed decision. And you can really only make a formal decision if you're on the inside of the program, right? You don't buy a house without going inside of it first. So let's hop in. We'll get going. We'll do 3 months, see if it works, and then decide from there, right? But not choosing is a decision. So you just have to depend and decide what future of our relationship are you going to want to cut off for the business, right? Now, the future one, again, it's fairly similar. Hey, I totally understand. 5 years in the future, what does life look like if this keeps going that way? Right? Let's consider both options. Again, you go back to the risk thing, where it's like only two out of the three are risk-free. One is guaranteed that you don't get what you want. Right? Either we work together and we work on this and fix it out, and that could be a risk, sure. Or things do work out. And that's awesome. You still took the risk there. Or three, you don't do anything. And that's a risk in itself that things don't get fixed for years. All right. But you're going to do it eventually. You know that there's something you need to tackle. So you might as well do it today so you can start benefiting from your success sooner. Right. And again, we don't really have to be on the nose on this decision right away. It's really of, is this decision going to get you closer or farther from your business goals? Right? If it's going to get us closer, then, you know, where's the hesitation from there? Right? Awesome. Last slide, and that was all in the closer part of it, is the reinforcement decision. Closer, they are. So people actually decide within the first 48 hours after signing up if they want to work with you again. In the first 48 hours of signing up, they're going to decide if they're going to want to move forward with you after that initial 3 months. So your job is reinforcing that they made a good decision. You have 48 hours to do that. There's different ways to do that. You can do a personalized video with a kickoff call right after. You can send them some swag, handwritten card. You can send, you know, set up three different promises and then deliver on those three different promises. Like, hey, I'm going to send you an email and a video and a this and a login, boom, 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 in the next couple hours. And then they get all four of those. It's like, wow, they said they were going to do this. They delivered on this. It's going to work out. Right? Do you really want to hammer that in there? And then that is pretty much everything. thank you guys so much. We're only 10 minutes over. I don't think that's that bad for all the information we went over. I've pretty much given you guys everything that I could think of and go over. Do you guys have any questions? Want to do some role play real quick or at all? I don't mind staying a little bit later and doing that. But yeah, thank you guys so much for sticking around and hearing me ramble for the hour and a half that we were here together. Hopefully you guys took some value from it. Again, this is stuff that worked for me. This is how I do it. If it helps you guys, amazing. That's my goal. So
thanks, Connor.
We'll leave it there. Yeah, of course.
Thanks so much, Connor.
Yeah, no worries, guys. Thank you, guys.
Hey, Connor.
Hi, this is great. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, guys. Thank you. Yeah, Ben.
Hey, do you do much outbound? Do you do any cold calling?
Yeah, when I started, I actually grabbed as many lists as I could in the beginning. I did. I tried to aim for about 75 to 100 cold calls a day. I did that for about just shy. I think it was just around 45 days of me doing that.
That's not very much. That's not very many days. That's great that you were able to move beyond that. Were you able to very quickly get past gatekeepers and get to decision makers in that process? And what do you have any tips for doing that?
Yeah, there's not too many in my industry, right? But when I did cold calling back in the day, there were a lot of gatekeepers. The best way that I always did that was just assuming that you had information with that person. And LinkedIn was really great for that. So if I was calling your assistant, I would just say, hey, I'm looking for Ben. Or I want you to be your assistant, Ben. You be your assistant. I'll pretend to be me and I'm trying to get a hold of you. Okay. Ring, ring. Hello.
Yep.
Hey.
Hello.
Hey, is this Ben?
No, Ben's not. He's not available.
Oh, gotcha. Hey, listen, do you know if Ben will be available for a quick, I don't know, 10, 15 minute call maybe tomorrow at like 1 o'clock?
What's this regards?
Oh, yeah. So Ben and I connected on LinkedIn. I just wanted to chat over some of the stuff that we had about marketing. Pretty lengthy. I don't, you know, there's a lot there. I just wanted to confirm some stuff with him. Maybe 10, 15 minutes if he's got it.
I'll tell you what, I'll shoot him a message and let him know.
Yeah, that'd be great. The number I have for him doesn't seem to be working. So, by the way, is this the best email for him? It's 123ben@herocks.com. Is that? That the best one for him?
Yeah, that's one of many that'll work.
Okay, I'll
he loves that He Rocks email.
Yeah, I bet. I'll send him over an email here as well. Just to make sure that we're on the same page, and then I'll call back tomorrow and see if it makes sense. Thank you so much.
Okay, sounds good. Okay, maybe.
Yeah, right. Like, there's only so much you could do, but I try to confirm an email. Try to confirm a time. If I assumed it was a she. Sorry, but. He, she, whoever assistant is, right, was like, yeah, they have a meeting at that time. It's like, oh, well, I know not to call at that time. right? Or if they say, oh, I don't have it, it's like, oh, well, this number is good to call at that time, maybe.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
Yeah. Hopefully that helps.
Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah. And thanks, again,
man. Really good material today.
Yeah, it really helps if you also connect with them on LinkedIn and actually send them a message, because then you actually have something there. So,
yeah.
Any other questions? Anything else? I'm happy to hang on for a little bit.
Karen looks like she has a question. Or no, she's just saying goodbye.
Oh, bye. Yeah.
Everybody's just saying goodbye.
No worries. Awesome. All right. Well, thanks, guys.
Cheers.
Thanks, Connor. Appreciate you.
Thank you.
This is great. Thank you.